When I wanted to start the business, I decided, okay, I need some money. So I went to my dad.
Yeah, of course.
And at the time, my dad was about 65, 66 years old. And you must picture this old Indian uncle. He's super short. He has a mustache. And I mean, he doesn't know a thing about the internet or makeup, right?
Makeup, yeah.
And I go to him and I say, Dad, I want to sell makeup on the internet. Now, at the time, the man didn't even have WhatsApp.
So, okay.
Right? And also, makeup is kind of a pretentious thing seen amongst adult men or older men, right?
Yeah.
And so...
Especially older heterosexual men.
100%. And as I said that, he looked me in the eye and he said, I'll back you.
Hi, you're listening to Bake the Podcast with me, Aisha Baker. Today, my guest is Rabia Gur. Rabia is a beauty entrepreneur and owner of the brand Switch Beauty. She's just 19 years old and started a flourishing beauty brand in her teens. Find out about her journey on this episode of Bake the Podcast.
So today we've got a really awesome guest in our studio. Actually, I'm joking, we're not in the studio. We're in Rabia's apartment. Rabia is Ray Bay, aka Switch Beauty. So excited to have Rabia with us. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my experience with you, Rabia. Hi, by the way.
Hello.
I'm so excited to have you because you fascinate me. Because you were only 19, right?
Yeah.
Wait, when were you born?
Born on the 27th of February, 2000.
Oh my God.
Every time I go to home, every time I have to write my ID number down, they always give me khatk for it because it starts with 2000. And they're like, ma'am, can you please check again? I'm like, I was born in this time.
Oh my gosh, you were born in 2000. That's crazy, eh?
That's Gen Z.
Yeah, we like nothing to you. We're basically aunties. So you are so typical Gen Z because you are so dynamic. But my first experience with you, I don't know if you remember this. So I have a very good memory.
I
almost like too good for some people. But when you were like 4, I think you were 14.
Yeah.
You sent me an email and you were like, hi Aisha, I've started my own beauty brand. It's called Switch Beauty. We do makeup cleansing accessories. Can I send you some stuff? So I was like, okay, cool. And you sent me things to wash my makeup brushes.
That's
and then
it.
You were like, I'm only 14 and I'm starting this business. And I was like, oh my God, this is so amazing.
I remember you said to me, you are a force to be reckoned with.
I can't wait to see what
you're going to do over the next couple of years.
Yeah, and now look at you, you're a guest on my podcast, and I'm going to pick your brain after this so you can help me with my business. So take us back to 14-year-old Rabia. Where were you and when did you decide to sort of like get into the beauty game? Because obviously at 14, you're not really like, you don't, what was I doing at 14? I can't even remember. What grade is that?
That's grade
Grade 8.
Grade 8.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was teaching my friends about periods.
Nice. You were that friend.
Yeah.
You know, that one friend who's who has information. Like,
yes,
that
was me. So I had a big cousin and I used to go visit her. They lived in Bloemfontein.
Yeah.
And she taught me how to use a tampon.
Nice.
Which was fascinating. So the first thing I did is I came to tell my friends that my big cousin taught me how to put in a tampon.
And they were probably like, you're the future.
It was like phenomenal. I actually never even used a tampon because I was still scared. But I could give the whole lesson like she gave me.
Nice.
And like, it was so funny. So that's what I was doing at 14. What were you doing at 14?
Well, I was in grade 8 at the time and I started watching YouTube videos. I discovered the internet.
In Durban or Joburg?
Pretoria. Have you heard of Lodium?
Yes, I do know
it's
Lodium.
Like, essentially, it's the Rylands of Pretoria or Joburg side.
Yeah.
It's like where most of the Indians.
What's the Durban equivalent of this? For our Durban listeners, or KZN?
Parlock.
Okay, so right. Rylands, Parlock, Lodium, and Roshni, is that
something? That's Linz, come on, Linz. Don't forget Linz.
Oh, Linasia. Of course. So you from Lodium, and you were a little Lodium girl, and you were watching YouTube videos, and then what happened?
I discovered the internet, and I started watching a lot of international beauty YouTubers. And that's where I started discovering international brands. And I realized, you know, we don't get this here in South Africa.
Mm.
And so my first idea was, you know, I want to import this stuff and I want to sell it on the internet so that other people can have brands like Anastasia Beverly Hills, et cetera,
yes,
et cetera. And in that, I kind of realized that South African women are very aspirational when it comes towards international cosmetics. And I thought, you know, what's cooler than selling someone else's brand?
Yeah.
Than selling your own brand, right?
Yeah.
And so...
She was at 14. Oh,
To give you a bit of background, like, I come from a very entrepreneurial family.
Okay,
so my dad's in business. All four of my siblings are in business.
Okay, and you are one of five. You told me
one of five. That's it. I'm the last one of five.
You're the baby, and you're one of 40 first cousins, and you're the last born.
That's it. And even in my cousins, all of them are kind of running their own businesses or their own practices or whatever.
So this is like a family thing, like to be entrepreneurial and come up with ways to sort of be in business.
That's it. And I think when you grow up and you're kind of surrounded by that conversation happening all the time, you build a vocabulary and you're able to articulate your thoughts better, and you're able to speak with adults.
Yes.
And so, like, for example, on my first day of school, my father, all my friends' parents were walking them into class, and my father gave me a badge that said my name on it.
No.
And he told me to meet the first adult I know, introduce myself, hug them, shake their hand, and ask them to direct me to the class. And so while all my peers were scared to speak to the teachers or afraid, I was able to do so confidently because of...
So your dad was giving you networking skills.
100%.
Like, or you were maybe 6 or 7 then.
That's it.
Yeah, so I actually have a similar story to you. My parents are also in business.
Mm.
I'm one of 25 cousins, maybe more. I'm sorry, cousins, if I don't know you. My family's not very close on my dad's side.
Mm.
We've all drifted apart, but growing up, we were all together, obviously,
that's
as
it.
Kids. And my dad's the only entrepreneur out of these siblings. I think there's 8 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And even my mom started a business together, super hardworking, because obviously they've started their businesses in apartheid. They didn't have options to, like, you know, get funding and stuff. So they really had to ask. Like, my dad's first business was selling, I don't know, do you know what kusistas are?
Of course.
Okay.
Come on, I'm cultured.
So his mom used to make kusistas and he would sell it in the neighborhood. That was his first business, and he was 6.
Right.
And he was like, I started my first business in my neighborhood. And then, so he's given us, my siblings and I, I'm one of three, and I'm the middle.
Right.
So my sister's like you. She's dynamic because, like, we've made all the mistakes for her.
And got,
like,
you.
We've taught her how to, like, be confident. She's super confident as well. When she was at school, I'll never forget, she went to the school called Little Buddies. She was, like, 4. And she'd just, like, be like, thanks, Mom. Bye. And I'm like, what? Mom's not going to walk you in. She's like, don't walk me in. I can do it myself. She'd walk herself in. And I think you guys, the babies, are always so good at that.
Definitely. You have role models all around you.
Yeah.
Kind of people who've made the mistakes and now they are who they are.
And who's your, like, biggest role model in your family setup, or maybe it was your friends, cousins, whatever?
Definitely my dad.
Your dad, okay.
Definitely.
Your daddy's girl.
That's it.
Yeah.
And
does your dad help you with the business at all?
Oh, my dad, what a
guy. Tell us, how did he help you start the business?
Right, of course. Okay, so when I wanted to start the business, I decided, okay, I need some money. So I went to my dad.
Yeah, of course.
And at the time, my dad was about 65, 66 years old. And you must picture this old Indian uncle. He's super short. He has a mustache. And I mean, he doesn't know a thing about the internet or makeup, right?
Makeup, yeah.
And I go to him and I say, Dad, I want to sell makeup on the internet. Now, at the time, the man didn't even have WhatsApp. So,
okay.
Right? And also, makeup is kind of a pretentious thing seen amongst adult men or older men, right?
Yeah.
And so,
especially older heterosexual men.
100%. And as I said that, he looked me in the eye and he said, I'll back you.
Oh, now, my gosh.
I always say, like, if he had the slightest
bit of... I'm getting emotional because I have a child.
Oh, man.
That's so sweet. I wouldn't tell Holly that.
Do it.
I'm you, going
you have no
to,
idea
like,
what it
I'll
does.
I'll back you.
I'll back you.
Yeah.
And like, if he had shown the slightest bit of hesitation in that moment, I would never, my confidence today would still be shaky.
Yeah.
But he was like, you know what? You can do it and we'll do it together. And so I borrowed 6,000 rand from him and I paid him back in 2 months.
Oh my God, this is so cute. I can't
And I've never borrowed a cent from anyone since.
Oh my gosh. So you basically, your dad capital funded you in the beginning of your business and you paid him back, so you own your full business. And you've never had to get an investor, or that's so amazing. So what was your first, the first product I know about is a makeup brush cleansing tool that you had. Do you still stock that?
No.
Okay. So what was your first, like, big selling, like, when you were like, okay, I'm making a profit now, I might drop out of school. I know you didn't drop out of school.
Okay, I did.
You did? Okay.
Okay. So,
what pushed you there? Tell us about that, because that's a very interesting story.
Right. I realized that there weren't a lot of, like, solutions to clean your brushes.
Okay.
Cleaning brushes for me was a mundane and monotonous task.
Yeah.
So I went onto the internet and I searched for other brands overseas who were offering these kinds of solutions.
Yeah. So and that's the importance of research.
There's it, right? And then I saw there's this thing called the brush egg, right?
Okay.
And essentially it's shaped like a little egg and it's got grooves and nicks on it, and you rub your brushes on it and you use soap and whatever the case is. And so I contacted a silicone manufacturer in China.
Okay.
And I showed them a pic and I was like, can you guys make this? And they were like, you need to pay so much for the mold fee and because of this and this and this.
And minimums and all this.
And that's the thing. And then I had my dad to go back to, and I said, Dad, this is what they said. And he advised me, and he said, this is how you're going to negotiate it. This is how you're going to go about it.
Yeah.
And so that's how I kind of got that product in. And today, that same product is being sold in Clicks, Tuscan Truets, and Fashini.
Oh my gosh, and you actually were the first, because I remember I'd never seen it before.
Right, and overseas it was such a huge thing.
Yeah.
And so for the first kind of year of my business, I went the private label route, right?
Okay.
And so what that means is you contact a manufacturer and you tell them, I need blush. And they'll give you their stock blush and you can put your name on it.
Okay.
And you can sell it. And I did that for about a year to gain capital, because it's minimal investment. Because you're not making your own product, the minimum order quantities are a lot lower than they would be if you were developing, right?
Yes.
And so every cent I made there, I either put back into the business or put into a savings account.
So how did you know how to do this? Is it the guidance of your dad, or was there some kind of like intrinsic, like, you know, you sort of had a feeling or you knew how to do these things like naturally? Because I know that, like, with my father, he always says he had a natural talent. Like, he could see where a product was going to move, where to invest in. He said he can't teach it to anyone. It's natural for him. So is that natural to you, or do you think that your dad sort of guided you there?
I think it was that characteristic of me was bred in me from a very young age. The people around me, so my family. And like, we were kind of taught that there's nothing you can't do ever. And so, like, in the face of a lot of adversity and like, who the fuck are you? How are you going to do this? I was just like, I can. And I never questioned that about myself. Yeah. As I got older, I started to question it. I must admit.
I think you develop insecurities with time.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, when someone gives you the idea that it's such a courageous thing you're doing, then you're like, oh, shit, it is such a courageous thing.
Yeah, should I be scared?
Should I be scared? Right?
Totally.
Meanwhile, as you approached it at age 14, when no one, and I think at that age, no one's really told you that you can fail.
Yeah.
Or no one's told you that you need to make something of yourself. So a lot of the people in my grade, right? When they kind of finished, so I'm just going to cough.
That's okay. Cough away.
I think I borderline have pneumonia.
Oh, gosh.
And so,
well, you're literally so busy. So I can imagine that you get sick a lot. You need vitamin up, girl.
I need that shot. You know that drip?
Yes, you need a vitamin drip. No, I think you just need to be healthy.
But I saw they charge 1,500 for the thing. That made me healthy when I saw how much.
You were
like, I'm fine.
I cannot afford 1,500. I'm okay. I'm good.
I'll be fine.
Give me some water. I'm good.
What was I saying?
You were saying that your peers at school.
Right. So when they got to age 18, everyone kind of started asking them, you know, what are you going to do? You need to make money. You need to study, or you need. And then that's a lot of pressure, because now you have something to prove to people. Whereas when you're that young, if you fuck up, you fuck up.
Yeah.
You know, and you start
still
again.
Living with your parents. You have no big responsibility.
Exactly.
And the fact that your parents made you so, you know, courageous and not like afraid of failure. It's almost like you didn't see it, like what I'm hearing from you. It's like you didn't think of the failure, you just thought of the experience.
Exactly.
And that's like the beauty of doing something so young.
Yes.
Because you don't have the fears that you get when you're an adult. Like, I know how, with me trying to scale my business and introduce new brands, and I think you've once spoken to me like, why don't you do this? And I was like, oh, I'm so scared, because I am scared, because it's a lot of risk that I would be taking, and if I fail, it's like my business is so public. It faces the consumer,
100%,
you know.
100%. So like I said, when you're younger, you have a lot less to lose.
Yeah.
And you can always pick up from where you left off, right? And I think that's something I'd like to keep with me as I grow up, is that, like, it doesn't matter what age you are, you can still say fuck it and start again.
Yeah, it's so funny to me that you're talking about your peers being 18, and that means like last year for you. So take us through, you know, when you decided to quit school, what grade were you in?
I was in grade 10. So at the time, I had built up all these balance sheets and all these numbers.
Yeah.
And I went to my parents and I said, Mom, Dad, this is what I want to do. And I think it kind of got to a point where I was balancing school, my social life, and the business.
When you say social life, is that like extramurals or?
No, like friends.
Friends, okay.
Like friends, yeah.
So did you do any extramurals, like, you know, hockey or like?
Oh, no, I went to a Muslim school.
Oh, do Muslim schools not have extramurals?
Not really. Like,
well, really?
Yeah, like we have PE.
So you don't do sport?
No.
Like at all?
No.
Oh my gosh, I went to...
Because we have all these extra Islamic classes, like Islamic history and...
So you did like Quran and...
Yes.
Okay. Well, I went to Anglican school.
Okay.
An Anglican all-girls school. And it's a private school. And the school is very fancy. Now that I'm out of the school, I'm like, yo, my school is fancy. We had like yoga and Pilates as an option at school. So I did yoga throughout
Must
high
be
school,
nice.
Like twice a week. And like we had like all these interesting classes. And then when I speak to other people, I'm like... you didn't have extramurals. Like, I used to start off with, like, did you guys not have yoga?
And then people
are like, no, we didn't have yoga. Yes. So you guys didn't, you had extra time because you didn't have extramurals, but you did your Islamic classes.
Yes, 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 right? And so it kind of got to a point where the business had started picking up quite well. And I was busy, like, packaging orders till like 3 a.m. in the morning, then studying for my test. Finishing an assignment and I sleep at
like... Were you even passing? Like, obviously, because you weren't focusing on your school, you were focused on your business.
I was a straight A student in everything but maths.
Okay. Wow, that's so funny because you're actually good at business. So it's like ironic almost because like, how could you not be good at maths?
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I never got the hang of maths. I think I failed maths until grade.
Because
until
maths is like, when did they start bringing letters in?
When did
maths?
They start bringing triangles?
No, what's so important about when they started bringing words in, I was like, whoa, guys. We used to do numbers, now you're bringing in letters and shapes. Like, you're screwing with me.
Please leave.
Yeah, please leave. Please leave maths alone. I was also not good at maths, funny enough.
And then, yeah, so I was flipping tired, like, every day at school. Yeah. And I was miserable.
Did your teachers ever complain to your parents that, like,
no, because they were very involved in my hustle.
Oh, okay.
They were super supportive. And I remember I used to get business calls in class.
Oh, my gosh.
No one was allowed to bring a cell phone, but they allowed me to bring a cell phone.
Like, Robbie's booked and busy.
She's God, gold,
she's booked
glowing.
And busy. Yeah, Robbie, you may leave the class, handle your business.
So my teachers, so the classroom is structured in such a way that there's an office in the classroom.
Okay.
For the private office. So they would let me sit in there and take my calls.
Oh my goodness. So I wonder if your school was like, why is she even here? She's like gonna buy our school in 3 years.
What was I saying?
Why you left school?
Right. So then I left, and when I left, I kind of got stuck in a rut for a bit.
Okay.
Because it was all this freedom all at once.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have any responsibilities now. And so I would wake up in the morning, order Nando's, watch Grey's Anatomy, sleep, wake up, do the same thing.
Yeah.
And my parents let me. That's the best part about this is that no one came to me and said, you dropped out, now I think your parents
let you do that? Because you were the fifth child.
Yeah.
And they kind of were probably very clingy with your oldest sibling.
Yeah.
Because I see how clingy Pani and I are with Harley. Like, we want to be involved in every minute of his development.
Nice.
And we're like so obsessed with him. And I think that's sometimes detrimental because I can see with my brother, for example, he'll maybe need advice from my parents, you know, whether it was like at school and deciding which subjects to take, whatever. He'd always go to my parents and like need to talk to them about everything. Whereas my sister, who's younger, 6 years younger than me, she'd always like just make it happen because my parents weren't as like so clingy with her.
Yes.
They like let her kind of be free. And because of that, she was like able to be independent.
100%. And then at some point, you start realizing your accountability and your responsibility when it comes to your life.
Because you're 19 and you understand accountability.
And that's what they give you when they give you freedom.
You know what I was doing at 19? I was dancing on tables.
Nice.
I'm serious.
Nice.
And my parents let me do it also.
Nice.
I used to go out in the skimpiest outfits, like literally hot pants. And I'd ask my dad for money, like wanting a reaction. Like, what's he going to say?
Tell me something,
please.
Like,
oh, he'd look at my shorts and be like, how much do you need? And I'm like, oh my God, this guy's saying nothing. And that's
what
also when I discovered accountability. Because I was like,
guy.
Why is he not commenting on the fact that my bum's hanging out?
Yeah.
He just left me. So then I just changed on my own. But I was very different to you at 19. I was having a massive jewel and failing uni.
Nice.
Yeah. I wish I actually didn't. Yeah. Simi's looking at me shocked. Producer Simi is looking at me shocked. Yes, I failed. I failed the first year of varsity because also that freedom thing. Because obviously 100%. I finished matric. I was also like pretty much straight A besides science. And then when I got to varsity, just the fact that I could dress up every day and put makeup
on,
it was like a shock for me. So I'd take so long to get ready in the morning. And then by the time I get to school, like two of my classes already finished.
Nice.
And then eventually I failed the first year. And then I got a nice talk from my dad. So
nice.
I pulled my socks up. But yeah, you at 19 are a very different reality. You were sitting here developing probably your next product, right?
I will show it to you even if you
want. Yeah, I'm so excited. So talk me through the product. Okay, so we talked a bit about your history, but talk me through actually putting a product together. Like the last product I know about from you is you guys sent me the Air Matte lipsticks.
Right.
And I was always, I must be honest, I was reluctant to talk about Switch Beauty on my account. And I told you that before, I think, because I was like, I don't know if I can trust this product? Yes. Like, what if there's a reaction? And because I'd built, spent so much time building up my reputation,
yes,
so it's very risky for me. Even though I actually use your stuff, I do use it.
Okay.
I just didn't want to like go there until you guys were developed enough, because I'd spend so much time, yes, developing my reputation. If I
100%.
Got a bad, if I advised on a bad product, it would be bad for me. So, and I explained it to you, and you understood that, which was so fascinating to me, because a lot of brands would be like pissed off and start talking shit about me to everybody. But you were like, oh, I respect that. Cool. So yeah, the last product I kind of got introduced to, and I actually spoke, it's the first time I spoke, yes, about your product, yes, was the Air Matte lipsticks. And I thought to myself, wow, this product is so amazing. I wonder what goes into making it. So right, what goes into making it?
For example, with Air Matte, right? I don't know if you remember, but like last year and the year before, matte lipsticks were all the rage, right? Now, yeah, we're kind of moving into gloss.
We're moving back, yeah.
We're moving back to gloss, yes. Serena
Van Der Woodsen. But it's the old 90s revival, which, correct, you won't know about because you were born in the 2000s. So let me school you on the 90s, Ravia. We wore overlined lips.
Nice.
And okay, I was born in 1990, so I'm like,
it must have been the best 10 years of your life.
I'm 10 years older than you, freak. That's just it. Like, literally eat me now.
My sister's 10 years old. You remind me a lot of her. Oh, if you're listening, hello.
Shout out to my sister. Shout out to my sister as well. You featured a lot in this podcast. Thank you for the information. So take us through Air Matte. You saying that matte was like the thing.
Right. So I started wearing matte liquid lipsticks and I loved it. The only thing I didn't like about it was the fact that they dried out your lips a lot. And you could physically see the cracks, yes, and whatnot, right? But then I liked normal lipsticks because they were moisturizing and comfortable, yes, on the lips. So I thought, why not make a crayon that was transfer-proof? Because, yes, the crayon itself has shea butter in it. It has beeswax in it. It's like, it's hydrating and comfortable.
I love the crayon also because it's like a liner. Like, it's easier, yes, to put it on.
Yes, correct. You have a lot more control than, yes, with a wand.
Yeah.
And so Air Matte in South Africa would then be the first transfer-proof lip crayon available.
Oh, my god!
And so I think that's why it caused all the hype and everyone was so crazy about it, because people hadn't seen a crayon that doesn't transfer.
Yeah, I hadn't. I was shook. I was like, whoa, this is amazing. Because, okay, Simi's saying he doesn't understand anything. Just explain the transfer thing.
Okay, so Simi, when you drink coffee from a cup, like for example this cup here, if I drink coffee with a usual lipstick, what would happen is my lips would imprint on the...
on the cup.
On the cup. Making something transfer proof means that it doesn't.
Yeah.
It dries down and that's
so
it.
So what she did is, what Rabia did is, she basically combined the look of matte and, mm-hmm, the theory of,
exactly,
a normal lipstick, a cream, and put it into one, and then you got like this beautiful sort,
yes,
of happy mixture, like a cocktail.
So usually in cream lipsticks, right, there's a lot of glycerin in there and that's what makes it super luscious and like, okay, sheeny and stuff, right?
Oh, I never knew
I threw
that.
Out the glycerin and I added beeswax and shea butter instead, which are more matte.
If you think about it. Does that affect your price point?
Definitely. 100%. With something like beeswax, it depends on where you get it from.
Okay.
Where you're sourcing it, what's the quality grade of the product itself.
How do you know all of this? Like, did you do a course in beauty?
I'm going to tell you something, Aisha. Everyone always asks me, like, where did you get your knowledge from, right? And I feel a bit of imposter syndrome when they ask me that because I don't feel like I'm all that smart. But
you are so
the internet,
smart, by the way,
is our generation's greatest resource. Yeah. I don't think you realize what we've been
given. So
you're
studying, basically. You basically were in, like, the University of Life. You, the University of Google.
I always say that.
Yeah, because you went online and you were like, I need to find out, how do I join? Ah, mind blown.
I'll walk you through it.
That's amazing.
I googled what makes nail polish dry down and not, like, dry.
Yeah.
And the ingredient itself is an acrylate.
Okay.
So I went to 4 different labs and I was like, can you combine shea butter, beeswax and acrylates and then put pigment in there to make it colorful? And 3 of them told me no. 1 of them told me yes. When they told me yes, they sent me a first sample. I made adjustments to the sample. I sent it back. They made a second sample, a third sample. I think it was on the 7th sample that I hit a sweet spot with that lipstick. And a couple months later, I launched it.
And then where do you test these out? Like, do you test them on yourself, on your friends, on your family, on your 155 cousins? Like, where do you test your products on?
To be honest, anyone who will, right?
Okay.
So in my time in the beauty industry, I've built up quite a nice database amongst self-taught artists, professional artists, editorial artists. And so what I'll do if I'm developing a new product, I will send it to them and I'll ask them for their feedback.
Wow.
And once they give me their feedback, I'll write all that down, make another sample.
You are wasting my money.
And
I paid
then,
for a degree to tell me to do this and you're telling me you just knew this.
One more thing I want to mention is the power of social community, right? With Switch, When I first started the brand, every brand was approaching social media as an advertising tool.
Yes.
And I approached social media in my native language as a community building tool, yeah, because I understood that social media was a place that people went to have a good
give
time.
Give me your brain. I just really want to leave with your brain. That's brilliant. You know, I'm learning about this now.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm busy like studying, is that I'm not studying also University of Googling at the moment.
Nice.
But all the research I'm doing is saying
Ivy League.
Yeah, I'm Ivy League Google, you know, entrepreneur. All the research I'm saying is talking about community-based
100%.
Social media.
And that's where we're shifting from, where brands are interacting with their audiences as communities,
yes,
versus dollar signs.
And do you think since you came forward, because initially you were Switch Beauty, no one really knew it was you. I think you were shy to showcase yourself because you
were
young.
Like, what if people laugh at me for being so young? I always
thought,
like,
I think because you were young, right? And now you, like, stepped into your power a little bit and showcasing more of yourself. And
yes.
And your brand, I feel, has grown because you've 100%. Said, like, hey, it's me, Kylie.
It's the power of storytelling, right?
And I see you on Twitter. Like, people share everything you post. They love you because you're so inspiring. So do you think that's helped grow the brand, the fact that you've come forward and said, like, this is my brand, I've worked on it for X amount of years?
In the beginning, I've always viewed my age as a vulnerability.
Okay.
And when I decided to accept that vulnerability and use it in my power, I think definitely the brand has grown. I think people are able to relate a lot more because I'm super candid and nonchalant, not only in my personal respect, but in the respect of the brand.
Yeah.
So, for example, if I'm developing a new product and I really don't know where to start, I will put my phone up on my gimbal, go on live and ask, what do you guys want? What do you guys want an eyeliner to do? For example, when I was developing my eyeliner, I said, what do you guys want an eyeliner to do? And everyone sent in there. They checked their surveys and whatever. I took it all together and then I put what I wanted an eyeliner to do. And then I went to Sephora and I bought every single eyeliner in the store.
Oh my goodness.
I used every single eyeliner in the store and I wrote down what I liked about each eyeliner.
Yeah.
Then I Googled the ingredient lists of all of those eyeliners.
So you research and developing yourself, like
that's
just
it.
You.
Mm-hmm. And then
so
I Googled.
So do you have a team?
Yes, so my operational employees and my marketing employees.
Okay, so you don't have a research and development team yet, so that's something you're going to work with
100%.
In the future.
Definitely.
So you are R&D, like you alone.
It's
that's
me.
Amazing.
R&D.
Yeah, Ray-Bay does it all.
So just one thing, right? Every time people read my Instagram name out loud, they say Ray-Bay.
Okay.
And then some people think my name is Raisa.
It's Rabia, right?
You know what I'm saying?
Okay, I also thought your name was Raisa.
So it's Ray-Bay, because you know.
Oh,
Ray-Bay.
No, I like Ray-Bay.
Come on, Aisha.
Change it, I'm rebranding it. Ray-Bay sounds cooler. I was so into it. It just rolls off the tongue. Ray-Bay doesn't sound good.
Okay, I see you. I accept. Maybe
I've changed her name.
It's time for a rebrand. Aisha Baker said so, guys.
Rebrand. You are now Ray-Bay.
If anyone's asking, it's Ray-Bay.
The people have spoken. You are Ray-Bay.
Is it?
I stand for the people.
A woman of the people, I stand. Okay? So, yeah, just kind of getting them involved in that. And then, furthermore, I took them on the journey of that process into launching the eyeliner. And when I eventually did launch the eyeliner, I sold out in my first batch.
Oh, my gosh.
Because
people
were anticipating it. Why? Because they'd been a part of the research and development. And I think the way in which a lot of makeup conglomerates or beauty conglomerates are approaching R&D is they're kind of throwing shit at a wall and hoping it sticks.
Yes.
Like it's these men, big men sitting around a boardroom table
and it
asking
shows,
themselves,
though.
What does she want? What does our consumer want? When they don't realize the power of social media has made it so easy for us to just ask what do you want?
Which I think is what Kim and Kylie are doing now, right? They're really speaking to the audience.
100%.
I think initially Kylie was also at that fear that people wouldn't trust her and she was kind of going, ooh, do I ask them? And now she's like, I think more front-facing as well.
Power to the customer.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, they're going to be spending their hard-earned money on your product. And I think what a lot of brands don't realize is they want to use social media to make the customer feel involved in the process, right? That's what they want to do. I think what they don't realize is you don't have to make her feel involved. You have to involve her.
Yes,
or involve him, right? And so, yeah, that's where I think that was the game changer point for me when I realized that. And the funny thing is I'm able to articulate all of this very well now because in theory, and I've been able to rationalize it. But at the time of starting my business, it's almost as if I knew these things innately because of my age.
Yeah.
And because of digital language being native to me.
Yes.
So
that's the thing about your generation or the Gen Zs is that you guys, the internet wasn't something that you got given.
Uh-huh.
You just knew about it. It was kind of like, what's that book to me that we used to read? I think it's called Childcraft. Encyclopedia. Do you remember the encyclopedia?
Britannica.
Yes, Britannica. It's kind of like the encyclopedia was to us. Like when we were in school, we didn't think of like going anywhere else but the library. Like I remember going to the library to do my projects. Like my mom would take me and I would do my projects on like if we did like South America, mm-hmm. we'd like go get the encyclopedia, research about South America. And you guys, firstly, don't know that life. It's beautiful. And then secondly, we had to borrow the books. You had to have a card. And
it's like when your parents tell you they had to walk across the river to get to school.
Oh, yeah.
This is like your version of the river.
I don't have shoes. I didn't have shoes to worry. I'm like, if I hear another, I use packets to cover my shoes from the rain because I only had one pair of shoes. I'm like, okay, we know you grew up in apartheid. This is the story I'm going to tell my kids.
That's it.
You had to go to the library, you had to get a card, you had to walk around with this card, find the books. Oh, and then you had this ruler thing that you had to stick in. When you take a book out, you had to stick it in there to say there was a book missing while you read it. So that's what we did to do project. And you guys just kind of knew to Google things and go on the internet. Mm-hmm. I think when the internet came about for us, we were like using it more of a social sharing space, which is like MSN. That's like a chatting room.
Yes. The one with the butterfly.
I think it mixed it. And like that was our introduction to social media. And I think like what I was saying to our last guest, she was on our podcast.
It was Talia.
Talia Goldberg. Yeah, we were saying that like, you know, we as millennials kind of like fucked up the world. And now we expect you guys to come in and correct it. Because we got this new technology and we didn't know how to use it. And I see it happening in business as well. When I started 10 years ago, I had to do this education or like to educate people older than me that the internet could be used as like a sharing space, a community.
Everyone must have thought you were crazy.
No, I was nuts. Oh, who do I think I am? That's what I always got. Like, who does she think she is coming to this event with a photographer? That was so unheard of.
Wow.
Like, someone bringing a photographer to an event.
And
like,
now
why
people
would
are
you
marrying the photographer.
I know. And they were like, why would you do this when there is an event photographer? Like, no, I want my own kind of pictures. I don't want your pictures. And, like, I'm learning now from younger people now to, like, be more natural. Because I come from a space where everyone was trying to be editorial.
Yes.
And now we're, like, scaling it back down. And no, not scaling it down. Scaling it up through stripping it down.
Okay.
So, like, you know, being more real.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you guys are so good at. It's, like, having that open dialogue. But also still respecting your space.
Yes.
Because you don't share your books and your balances with us.
Okay.
And I think a lot of what millennials do is a mistake. And I've said this so many times. It's, like, we don't know how to share.
Yeah.
We, like, overshare. It's, like, no, dial it back, hun. You need to just keep sharing. Like, how you're saying, you ask your customer about what eyeliner she wants. But you don't send all the details about you going to go to the factory and then this happened and then that happened. Like, that journey story is not always important.
100%.
She wants to feel involved, but now don't make her work for
exactly.
it also. Now she must go to the factory with you.
Exactly.
So yeah, that's just my little comment on that. I just want to ask you about the factory. Do you produce your stuff locally or are you going globally to do it? Do you have to travel for your job? Tell us a bit about
that. Okay, so I travel 3 times a year for my job.
Okay. Is that like a time you've set for yourself? Like,
yes,
I only go 3
times.
Yeah. Okay.
So in the beginning, the middle, and the end, right?
Okay.
And I do a whole tour. I do Taiwan, Korea, Japan, China.
Japan? How's the makeup game in Japan?
They're really good with pencils.
Oh, really?
They're really good with
pencils. Didn't they invent that new neon eye thing?
Ooh, I don't actually know. I'm just going to Google that. But they're really good with pencils. All kind of retractable pencils. You get the best ones out of Japan, right? With that being said, the way in which a lot of people who are looking to start their brand approach production is, or not people, just anyone really in the beauty industry. I lost my train of thought, sorry.
No, you were saying about you're going to travel. And
right. And so the way in which they approach it is they'll find one lab and they'll make this one lab make everything for them.
Okay.
And what they don't realize is that different labs and manufacturers have access to different raw materials, machinery, and technology.
Okay.
Right? And so it's up to you to find the lab that's best at making one thing that you need from them. So, for example, I make my eyeliner with a different manufacturer than I would make my eyeshadow with, than I would make my skincare products with, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So with that being said, I will come up with a product idea, create a brief, and approach 5 labs that I think are fitting. Each of them will send me a sample, and I'll go through all 5, find the 2 or 3 that I like, and then work with those labs to see who, at the end of those 3 months or 4 months, sends me the best sample.
Okay, and then they send it from wherever they are in the world, and then you go visit them afterwards. So with all this,
I actually don't visit them afterwards. I visit them whenever it is that I'm going. So,
okay.
Because in the beginning, obviously, everything was done through text and email because I couldn't afford to go and actually immerse myself in the experience. Also, at that time, I was private labeling, so I knew nothing about development or whatever the case is. And I think at some point in the first year and a half of my business, or 2 years maybe, I kind of realized that everyone else is doing the same thing that I'm doing now. Mm. Like, I did it 2 years ago, but right now they all got on it and I need to level up.
Yes.
And so I realized brands weren't asking the consumer what he or she wants. And that's how I kind of started.
I noticed a massive change, I think, in your... I think it's probably when you left school, I noticed the change in your brand and that it became more of a brand and not a rebrand.
Yes.
Not a private label brand. And obviously, everyone sort of caught onto the labeling thing and like the whole AliExpress, like basically that thing like blew up.
I got
up
a lot
here.
Of hate for it in the beginning. A
I
lot.
Know. I wanted to ask you, how did you deal with the hate? Because you were young.
It was an incredible amount of hate. I remember one chick actually started a Facebook group just to bash Switch
Yes,
Beauty.
I remember.
And it was kind of debilitating at the time because there were so many other brands who were doing the exact same thing.
And did you get tears over this? Like, did you cry over it? Did you go to your, lay in your mom's bed and on her chest and like, how do I go
I didn't,
it?
At the time, I didn't think that was an option because it was just like, okay, but now what?
Yeah.
You know, like, what must happen now? And I knew where I was headed. Always, I knew that this is not what I want to do all the time. Mm, I need this to make money.
Vision.
Right? And so this isn't me. This doesn't define me. And so not necessarily tears, just kind of like annoyance almost with like the state of things is that like these women are 4 times older than I am and finding time to go on the internet and call me these names and say these things about me.
Well, the reason why, you do know why, right? They did that. It's because you're coming into the... You're coming in with like, it's like that, who do you think you are?
Yeah.
Who do you think you are, baby girl? Coming like, in here
I'll never
with
forget
your
one
product.
Time, someone phoned me on a private number. I actually stopped accepting calls from private numbers. One time someone phoned me and they said, know where you come from. Stop getting a big head. You are nothing. You are no one. You literally live in Lodium. And then I said to that person, I said, okay, where am I from? And they said, Lodium. I said, where am I now? Lodium. What's your point? Good night.
That's a great way to deal with hatred because I found haters very challenging in the beginning of my career. Now it doesn't affect me at all. But
do you think that's an effect of you having a baby?
Yes and no. I think it's meeting my husband. I met my husband 5 years ago and my husband played international cricket. So he hate globally for him. So then I used to like cry about, or as we would say in like Cape Town, I would chunk about.
I love that word.
Chunk is the best word. Chunk
my
is like
word
a like
Cape
a owl
Town.
Cry. It's not even a normal cry.
My favorite word from Cape Town is jazz.
Jazz?
Are you jazz?
Jazz
I use
chunk.
Ben jazz.
Actually, someone brought back another word recently. Oh, skit. Somebody was talking about skit.
And chias.
Oh, is chias not a Cape Town thing? Is it a Cape Town thing? No, that's a South African thing.
Okay.
But chunk is definitely a Cape Town thing. And
nice.
I would literally be like chunking, crying about like haters and stuff. And my husband would be like, he would be so confused as to why it affected me. At that time, we were just dating. He would just not understand why it affected me. And then when I started like searching his name on social media and I just read some of the horrific things people were saying about him, just for throwing a ball the wrong way, like, get over it, please, it's not life and death. And people would get so hurt about it and so touched and it would not affect him at all. And then I kind of watched and learned from there, like how to compartmentalize what other people think about me and what I think about myself.
Yes.
So now, because I think about myself in a really positive way,
yes.
And then having my baby, I was like, literally squeezed this thing out of my vagina. It was lit, like literally, figuratively, every sense of the word. And I'm like, once I had him, I didn't need anyone to help me. I did it all on my own. Like I squeezed that baby out by myself. I didn't notice anyone in the room. It was like such an awe-inspiring experience for me that I just thought like, you can say whatever the fuck you want about me, but it's literally, it means nothing. Mm. So yeah, that for me changed me. So yes, in some ways it's about like having a child and, you know, yeah, it improved my confidence. Mm. But in other ways, I think it's also experience and like over time.
I guess it kind of forces you to know yourself and it kind of forces you to ask those uncomfortable questions of yourself. And when you know your worth and when you know what you're going to do and what you're working towards, that helps a lot.
Yeah. And I think also if you know your flaws, like you were saying, you knew your goal was to, you know, make your own brand and really have like a customized brand. But you had to start in the labeling portion of the business. And to know this is my flaw is that I don't have a tailored product. Mm. It's easier to overcome that flaw, 100%. Right? For me as well, I knew my flaw, but I know my intention was always positive because I had this very like I actually still have a very like hippie approach to my brand in that like
I smack it though, eh? Don't lie.
I'm always like, I just want to change the world and make everybody happy, world peace. Whereas that's not really a way to think about business. But I turned that side of myself, which my one of my friends, she's also in like the social media space, and she always says to me like, oh, I can see another charity case coming on. In other words, like, because I'm too nice, she always says that. But I use what I like about myself, and that's also a flaw, to kind of generate this community online.
Yes.
And I think that's what you did as well. Your love for makeup, but also this, like, I think the Switch Beauty customer and hype man isn't just someone who loves makeup. I think she's someone who loves the fact that you guys represent, like, evolution.
Yes.
Like, it's not about having everything together all at once. It's like, oh, you can have this and the small thing and make it a bigger thing.
Yes, and a lot of people have kind of grown with the brand.
Yes.
And I think that's really special because it brings emotion into the commerce.
Yes.
Right? It's a dignified transaction. It's not like I'm walking into your store, I'm buying your shit and I'm leaving.
Yeah.
It's like I'm hopping onto my Instagram, I'm engaging with your polls, I'm engaging with your giveaways, I'm consuming the valuable content that you're looking at putting out there in order to educate me, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, okay, let me segue out of this very serious conversation because I can literally talk for days about deep stuff. Oh my God. So I'm just going to quickly say, I'm dying. My poor friend.
Pneumonia.
Yeah.
Flippin' bronchitis.
No, you sound sick. You're but you should probably... So Ray, I'm gonna call you Ray because I decided now that you're Ray Bae.
Nice.
If it's irritating you, please tell me because I hate when people call me Aisha. It fucks with
Sup
me.
Aisha.
Oh my God, my ex manager used to call me Aisha. It used to drive.
That's why he's your ex manager.
No,
stay woke.
I can't. I literally was like, if you call me Aisha one more time, I started saying things like, when she would say Aisha, I'd say I don't know who that is because it would annoy me. My name is Aisha. It's not hard to say. Okay, Rabia.
Yes.
I want to know about, you know, how many product lines do you guys have at the moment at Switch?
Mm-hmm.
You started how many years ago?
Almost 5.
So in five years, you went from doing accessories and tools. Where are you now? How many products do you have and what's to come?
Okay, so my creative process when I'm looking at introducing a new product is, I used to kind of rely on the trends. So I would see what people are doing overseas and
okay.
Like, okay, so we need to bring this to South Africa.
Yeah.
And for a while that worked until it didn't work because international brands became more and more accessible in South Africa.
Yes.
And so I was forced to ask the uncomfortable question of, and the difficult question of, what don't we have in South Africa?
Yeah.
And overseas.
Well, we don't have a lot.
That's the thing. That's why South Africa is such uncharted digital territory.
You know what I'm looking for at the moment? Like colorful eyeliner. I just can't find it anywhere. It's really annoying me. I'm like, I just want like bright colored eyeliner.
I feel like a green would look so nice on you. Like
I feel
green.
The same way. You know, I just want this. I go to shops and I'm like, I can't find this stuff. So
yeah.
What is it that you've noticed in your product line that you need to add?
Okay, so first off, that it started with me obviously asking those questions to my customers. And they came back with, I want a cleanser that does this and this and this and doesn't do this and this and this. And at the time, I was like, okay, hood up. I don't know that much about skincare.
Yeah.
Let me start learning about skincare. And that's when I started learning about cosmeceuticals and the difference between cosmetic skincare and cosmeceutical skincare. So I'll be selling my first actual physical skincare product. It's actually over there if you look at it.
Oh, wow. Very exciting. Yeah.
Right? And it is a skin mist and dewy skin set.
Okay.
Right? It's made in Korea. As you know, K-beauty is all the rage these days.
Yeah.
And it's got 200 times concentrated aloe vera powder in it.
Okay.
So my friend's baby had a bum rash and she sprayed the spray on the bum rash and the bum rash went away.
Wow.
It's also got another powerful moisturizing ingredient in there called polyglutamic acid, which is 10 times better at holding water than hyaluronic acid is.
What? Really?
So it is sensational.
That's insane.
Right? And so something like that, we don't have that here. We have Max Fix Plus.
Yes.
And we have Urban Decay All Nighter. But we don't have a setting spray that doubles as a skin mist and is that good at retaining moisture,
yeah.
aka dewy. I'm sure you know we're kind of moving into the dewy looks of things with makeup looks.
And I think you also being in the Highveld in Pretoria, you guys, I find my skin dries out like insanely there. So that's a really nice product for that part of Africa as well.
Definitely.
Are you guys in Africa, in other parts of Africa?
No, not yet. A lot of people have asked me why I haven't looked at international expansion. And my answer to that is just, the reason why I started the business was to give South African women something to be proud of.
Yeah.
Right? And so, for example, my eyeshadow palette has names in there of every single...
I know, my name's in there.
Your name is in there. Powerful South African woman. Right? And so I launched cool. that. I launched that in Women's Month last year.
Simi was shook. He sent me a picture. Producer Simi sent me a picture. He goes, Aisha, your name is in this eyeshadow palette. And right? I'm like... Oh, wow.
Now, imagine you open that palette and you see a name that resonates with you.
Yes.
Or a cousin's name or a friend's name. It gives you, it kind of makes you feel
it
like...
It empowers
you. To like yes. open the palette. And I wanted it to be a brand that girls would get together and do their makeup in front of their friends and pull out the palette with pride.
Yes.
Not with, oh, I'm using a South African brand.
And yeah. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, I did.
And so no one is really dominating the South African beauty space.
Yeah.
Especially the South African digital beauty space. And so that's why
I see Woolies is now shook by you that they're trying to also do it. Because Woolies had their own private label for a long time. Mm. And I know actually they produce the shadows and color products here in South Africa.
Yes.
And now they're working with global artists
That's
to,
it.
To develop the product.
So, I mean, I've been approached by Clicks, The Skim, Red Square, Truworths, Fashini, Woolies, every retail chain in the country wanting to sell, or who sells cosmetics, they wanted to sell Switch. And I've never tipped my toe into retail because I think that the way people are buying makeup is changing.
Yes.
Right? And
how are people buying makeup? In South Africa anyway.
Brands are able to find the sweet spot between offline and online, right? Okay. And combining offline and online to give the customer an experience. It's no longer about selling a product to someone. It's about tailoring that product to them, making them feel involved, involving them, and giving them an experience surrounding the product.
I think experiential marketing is really amazing.
Definitely, 100%.
I love that you guys do your little pop-ups around the country. And like, I see Kylie Jenner also starting to do that as well. Mm. Maybe she follows you.
Wow.
She's doing, maybe on a mood board. She's also doing those pop-ups for her brand as well. But she did go into retail eventually.
Yes, so I think she's at Ulta.
Yeah, she's at Ulta. Is that something you would do in the future, maybe?
I always say, like, if I ever were to open up a Switch Beauty store or have Switch Beauty in real life for people to buy, you'll notice, like, with my pop-up stores, it's not just a place where people come to buy stuff. People actually chill out there. They take
like
pictures
mood,
there.
Yeah,
they network
mood.
There.
Yeah.
And so if I ever had to open up a store, it would probably be, like, a cafe.
Oh, my gosh,
with, like, free Wi-Fi where people can come build their businesses and do their things. And, and like,
that's
like
actually something I really want to do. Maybe we should stock Switch in there.
There's it.
I really want to do that. I'm, like, desperate to do it. But, like... All of my ideas start with, like, being nice to humans.
Okay.
And then my dad's like, when I discuss it, he's like, okay, great. How is this profitable? And I'm like, okay, wait. Let me just rethink the whole idea. I'm actually not great. I always say this. I'm not good at business and I'm not that creative. I'm a brilliant project manager.
Okay.
I can manage a team like no other.
Nice.
But I'm not good at profit and that side of things, you know?
You know what I've realized in employing people is that, like, I hate admin and I hate finance stuff, right? I hate numbers. If you ask me to look at a spreadsheet, I'll cry.
Yeah.
But there's someone out there who wakes up in the morning and the first thing they think of is spreadsheets.
My sister.
And so delegating is so important when you're looking to scale a business.
Yeah.
Because you can't do everything. And that's something I really struggled with in the beginning is because I always thought no one will be as meticulous as I am with things.
And no one will be as passionate about your business.
How much you trust someone, you know what I'm saying? And it's that risk. I think that was the biggest
risk. Don't you find staffing is like the most biggest challenge in business?
I hate HR, my friend. Like, I hate HR.
I find like I can never just... I've had so many
my
managers.
My right-hand
I've
employee is moving to the Ukraine.
Oh, no, let's that's so unfair. My right-hand employee currently is my assistant, Zach. And she decided she wants to work in advertising. I'm so happy for her. She actually just started out as an intern and then she ended up being so passionate and like doing the amazing
Aren't
things
you like
for
super
us.
Proud of yourself that like you had a part in that?
Yes, but I'm also like depressed.
Now what
I'm
must
like,
I do?
Why are you leaving me? So it's like I either find these amazing people to work with that go and follow their dreams and I tend to inspire my staff to do that. Or I find these like really like scary people who just really want like percentages of my of my profits.
Go for it.
And she's alive.
I'm fine. Guys, I made it. God is great. You know, if it's your time, it's your time.
It's your time, but it's not your time. You just have a little bit of a throat issue.
I haven't had the golden dish yet. I need to still.
What's that?
Isn't it like iconic Cape Town food?
Okay, listen. There's some things I don't know about.
Sammy?
I don't know about golden dish. I've never had it.
Come on, Aisa. Chimon.
What is it? Oh, I've probably eaten it but never been there.
I'm sure you must have eaten it. I see it on everyone's Instagram.
Oh, really?
Apparently it's like iconic. Like it's like
super
old.
Getting golden dish before you leave Cape Town.
I must.
Sammy's refusing. He's going to be forced to eat it.
Sammy,
you're going to be here for the jewel, my friend. You're going to be eating it. He's like, yeah, my body. Oh, we can't sing that song anymore. R. Kelly's cancelled. I was about going to R. Kelly reference.
I'm very thankful I wasn't a part of that era.
I know. It's really hard because, you know, like a lot of times I want to throw out a song. Like the other day, my son was like, boing, then I was like toya toya toya, and then I'm like, oh, he's cancelled. I can't say it. You know what's funny is that we've actually run out of time.
No way, those are nice shoes.
Thank you. I will hook you up.
Oh wait.
I have run out of time speaking to you, which is really sad because I actually feel like we need to have a 2.0 on this.
Let's do it.
Conversation. But thank you so much for coming to talk to us. Is there anything that you want to tell my peeps listening to the podcast about Switch? Is there anything they can look out for? Must they follow you?
I get asked in every interview, what's your advice to younger people looking to start their own business and whatever the case is, right? And I obviously get a lot of entitled emails from other Gen Zs and millennials demanding advice.
Okay.
And demanding that I dedicate my time to them and whatever the case is. And I've given a lot of different answers, but this is the one that I'm currently feeling at the moment. I promise I can talk.
Okay,
your
go
motivation
for it.
Should never
Take
come from an outside source.
Yes.
Right? And so it shouldn't be another thing, person, money, etc. It needs to be something innate and something within you. And the way in which you figure this out is by asking yourself the uncomfortable question of why. So everyone knows what they're doing and everyone knows how they're doing it, but no one knows why they're doing it.
Yeah.
So know why you're doing what you're doing, and you'll never even when you burn out, you'll still be motivated.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. I loved your advice. I loved speaking to you. So you guys can follow Switch Beauty on Instagram. It's SWIII.
IITCH. That's it.
Yeah.
Siri pronounces it as Switch Beauty.
Switch Beauty. You can find them online. And I really encourage you guys to go and follow Rabia on Twitter. She's actually really awesome to follow. It's at Ray Bay, R-A-E Bay.
No, R-A.
Oh, Rabe. She's now going to change it, so I don't know what's
going to change it to the Aisha's one.
Yes. But she's awesome on Twitter, and we're definitely going to have you back so we can chat more. You can follow us on at Baked Online. You can find me online on www.bakedonline.co.za. And then don't forget to give POC Podcast a follow as well. I'll catch you guys again soon.
This is a POC Podcast production. This is a POC podcast
powered by Blue Blood.